You and I back together again as we kick off a brand new month of shows, Wednesday, December 1st, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. We featured remarks from Governor Ned Lamont on the state's new family and medical leave program, and Attorney Mike O'Neill joined us from the Landmark Legal Foundation to chat about the U.S. Supreme Court's oral arguments on a controversial Mississippi abortion law.
Remember back in the 90s, and Chris Dodd, Senator Dodd, putting in place family leave, medical leave. Then we move forward. Rosa thinking hard about paid family and medical leave. Some of those discussions happened right here, right, Claire? Right at that table, right at that table. And now Connecticut, one of the very first states in the country to have paid family and medical leave. It's one of those ideas whose time is coming, but it sort of sat around the legislature for a while, never quite had the impetus to get across the finish line. Until Julian Robin took the lead in the legislature and said, here we go. And there's no stopping this duo. And it was the right thing to do. And then you get this passed, and then it's a question of, well, how do you get it implemented? How do you get this job done? How do you get it done responsibly? How do you get it done promptly? How do you get it done with fiscal rectitude? And there, Josh Jabal and Andrea Barton Reeves and our friends from Aflac took the lead. And today, we are on board. People are signing up. It's under budget. It's ahead of schedule. And that doesn't always happen in a government. And it gives people confidence that we can make a difference in folks' lives. You know, Claire said, look, this is important for kids. It's important for parents. I love it because it's important for Connecticut and employers as well. I want to be the most family-friendly state in the country. I want people to know that one more reason you want to come to Connecticut is because we treat workers with respect. We put a big emphasis upon kids and make it easier for you to keep working. And I think as we found over this last year of COVID, and my God, even the White House had to offer some paid leave during the worst of COVID for the federal employees. Well, the rest of them are catching up with us. But I think it just reminds people how important it is as we try and get people back to work, give them confidence they get back to work. They can get back to work safely. They can do this now and know that they don't have to risk between a sick child or a sick parent or a pregnancy and work. You don't have to make that choice. We're able to do it both. That allows us to get back to work. That allows businesses to grow and expand. And it's the right thing for our kids. So I just want to give a big shout out to the Paid Family and Medical Leave team. It's 26 people. It's a small quasi starting this thing up from scratch. Andrea, you know, she's got an amazing background. Spent some time in insurance, spent some time in legal, spent some time at HARC, and an extraordinary background to put this together on a timely basis. I hope it makes as big a difference for people's lives as we dream it should.
Well, a lot of legals on both sides of the issue watching today is the U.S. Supreme Court, the nine justices, with the 6-3 conservative majority hear oral arguments in a case that's technically known as Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health. A lot of folks are boiling it down to this. If the justices uphold a Mississippi abortion law that effectively bans abortions at 15 weeks, does that effectively neutralize Roe v. Wade, the 1973 decision guaranteeing nationwide abortion rights, and then maybe sending it back to the states? One of our go-to guys on legal stuff like this, Mike O'Neill, an attorney at the Landmark Legal Foundation, joining us for a few minutes. Mike, it's Paul again. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you up there?
I am good, and I'm watching on these blogs and seeing some of the questions, Mike, which is always fascinating,
right?
What the nine justices ask, because you folks and lawyers can say, okay, well, if Justice so-and-so is asking this, that
sure
may mean this. What have you been able to glean from this so far today?
Well, it's not to get too, again, not to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but you can glean a few things. First of all, you can look at, let's get really specific on what some of the justices were talking about today. It was a 90-minute oral argument session. It was vigorous. Interestingly, just off the bat, Elena Kagan, who is known as one of the court's, the three liberal justices on the court, was strangely quiet. She had a few questions, but normally you expect her to be vigorous and ask a lot of questions and a lot of inquiries. And she was strangely quiet. And there's been a little bit of speculation about why she was quiet. Some have speculated that maybe she was preserving her, keeping her powder dry so she could cobble together some sort of compromise in conference. Or maybe she just didn't feel that the arguments were particularly strong on the part of the pro-abortion advocates. But interestingly, she was quite quiet. Justice Sotomayor, predictably, was very, very vigorous in her questioning for the pro-life or the Mississippi Solicitor General. So she was effectively, if you really wanted to listen to it and boil her down her questioning, it was essentially talking points from Planned Parenthood. I mean, she sounded more like an advocate rather than a justice. Interestingly, the real interesting question here is the questions from Justice Kavanaugh, who many put in kind of that swing group of justices where we really don't know where they're going to come down on. You know, you could say Justice Kavanaugh, Chief Justice Roberts, perhaps Justice Barrett. We don't really know where they're going to go. But Justice Kavanaugh seemed to really go back to a couple of points in his questions on all three of the advocates. And it really focused on what his questions were really focused on, the fact that the Constitution is silent as to whether there is a right to an abortion or not. Now, some argue, I think pro-life advocates argue, that the Constitution actually really isn't silent, that there is a right to life in the Constitution, and that the Constitution protects the unborn. What Justice Kavanaugh was talking about was that he was coming down in kind of this area where it was silent. So in other words, there's no right to an abortion. So because the Constitution is silent, the decision should be left to the state and state legislatures, maybe Congress, but it shouldn't be a decision that the justices of the Supreme Court should come down. Now, this, of course, would be a reversal, a repudiation of Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey. And what it would do would be, if that position were adopted by the court, it would return the decision-making authority on how to regulate abortions to the states. And that's where it was prior to Roe versus Wade.
Interesting. Mike O'Neill, great stuff. Let's get into that momentarily. Mike, first, hang on. Traffic and weather together. More with Mike O'Neill from the Landmark Legal Foundation as you try to infer what some of the justices are thinking on this case that could, now no guarantee it will, but could completely upend Roe v. Wade. First, though, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And we're joined once again by one of my legal go-to guys. He knows from whence he speaks, Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation, breaking down what went on today. The arguments, 90 minutes, that's it. 90 minutes in and out, and now the justices will render their decision sometime this spring as to whether or not the Mississippi law that bans abortion after 15 weeks is constitutional. And if it is, a lot of people say, well, you know, that's the end of Roe v. Wade. And as Mike and some other people have said, it just becomes a state's rights issue after that. Mike, I'm looking over some notes here, and I see that Justice Gorsuch says here, criticized the court's undue burden standard, which prohibits abortion regulations that impose a substantial obstacle on access. And Mike, I said to my listeners earlier, you know, there have been abortion cases that have gotten to the federal level and the Supreme Court before, and I know that I always hear that, the undue burden. Yeah. Explain that, if you will.
Well, that was the precedent that was established in Casey. So Casey, that it came down that a legislature could not enact a law that places an undue burden, quote, and that's in quotes, undue burden on a woman's right to have an abortion. And what has happened in the subsequent 30 years since that decision came down, it's really proved unworkable, because undue burden has been looked at as interpreted by different courts in different manners. And so it really kind of cuts to the problem with Casey being a flawed decision, because this undue burden decision is very nebulous. It's inconsistently applied. It's inconsistently applied amongst the states. And it really shows the weakness and the problems inherent in the Casey decision, which was the second big decision. Here we've got Roe versus Wade, which was, again, 1972, which established the so-called right to an abortion. And then you had an affirmation of that right in Casey, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, and the establishment of this undue burden test, which you're referring to. Now, let me just talk real briefly about the problem.
Sure.
There was a lot of talk about stare decisis. And if anybody listened to the case, non-lawyers heard this term stare decisis. And what that means is that is the judicial principle that courts will generally defer to earlier findings, earlier decisions. The point what we're talking about here is judicial precedent. And again, the judicial precedent established in Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey. Advocates for abortion, the pro-choice folks, will say that those two cases constitute this super precedent and cannot be undermined and cannot be reversed. Well, the court really, a few justices, Justice Kavanaugh and then really Justice Alito, really poked a lot of holes in the reliance on that principle of stare decisis. They aptly pointed out that if there's a bad decision like Casey that uses this ridiculous undue burden test, the court shouldn't be wedded to bad decisions. And of course, what is the seminal case here is you're talking about Plessy versus Ferguson and Brown versus Board of Education, separate but equal cases.
I did see, Mike O'Neill, some conjecture in some circles that there's a chance, although slight, that this could be kind of a, I think the language I saw used was a tightening or a finessing here where, you know, the court may kind of sort of punt a little bit and say, well, there's really no absolute on either side, but we understand what Mississippi's trying to do here. What would that entail, you think?
Okay, that's an interesting point. And I think that you had a few questions kind of circling that point from Justice Roberts, and that's probably from Chief Justice Roberts, and that's to be expected, kind of cobbling together some sort of middle ground. You could speculate that that might be one of the reasons, my speculation is that might be one of the reasons why Justice Kagan remained quiet, is that she sees she's reading the tea leaves and she's going to attempt in conference to cobble together some sort of middle ground. Well, according to the advocates, they really bailed on both of those middle grounds. Both sides really strenuously wanted to put up the fact that this is either an all-in proposition. You're either going to repudiate Roe and Casey in the case of the Mississippi Solicitor General, and in the case of the other side, they are going to affirm Planned Parenthood v. Casey. And so I think you might have maybe two justices who are kind of in that middle ground area. And again, this is purely speculation. But I really do think you have Justices Kavanaugh, possibly Comey Barrett, Gorsuch, Alito, and Thomas in the field for repudiating Roe and Casey.
Do we know if Clarence Thomas spoke today or not? Because a lot of times he doesn't.
Oh, yes.
Oh, he absolutely. Did. Okay. So he was active today. Okay.
Absolutely. Justice Thomas was really active, and he asked a number of important questions. And his questions really hit to the point about where is this right to an abortion? Where is it contained in the Constitution? And clearly it's not. He tried to pin down some of the advocates. Where do you find this right? Is it a right to liberty, right to privacy? Where specifically? You know, you can see a Second Amendment right to bear arms. It's right there in the Bill of Rights. Right to free speech. It's right there in the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where is this right to an abortion? So his question is really focused on that.
And again, Mike O'Neill's with us from the Landmark Legal Foundation. Mike, Mark, I've been saying on the air here that this doesn't mean abortion's going away, correct? This just means that, in fact, I'm likening this to gun laws. This means that states, if this breaks the way the pro-life crowd wants, this means that states will have a much wider latitude from completely outlawing it to putting more safeguards in, lower timelines. States would be able to do that, right?
Absolutely. It returns authority for regulating abortion to the states. And again, it returns it into the political realm. Look, half our country has been silenced for this issue for the past 50 years. Half of the nation has had no voice in how abortion is regulated in our country because of the Roe versus Wade decision 50 years ago. Now those people will have an ability to have their voice and have their views expressed in this issue through the political process.
And Mike, finally, I was a little surprised, and I didn't hear it because I was running around. I guess the audio arguments of this were picked up by some broadcasts, which I guess is kind of, you know, pleads to the gravity of this. So the court allowed some of the audio to be broadcast today.
Oh, absolutely. The audio is available. I mean, anybody can listen in the whole time. I personally listened to the whole 90 minutes, mm-hmm. and I encourage anybody on these high-profile cases to listen in, try to get a perspective on how serious that these issues are taken at the highest court in the land.
Yeah, and don't rely on like I say, people sitting at home, the keyboard warriors with their Google with their Google University law degrees.
Exactly. The hot takes from the media.
Yeah. Oh, that. Mike O'Neill. Mike, thanks once again. Landmark Legal Foundation. Check them out online, folks. LandmarkLegal.org. Mike, thank you, and we'll speak down the road, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul. You have a great evening.
You too. Mike O'Neill there, great guy, puts it in perspective. Yeah, Landmark's a conservative group, but I think the legal underpinnings here were well voiced by him. Check it out, landmarklegal.org, and he's right. Go to, just Google it, and you can find the oral arguments today. Listen to it. It's only 90 minutes, Put it on in the background. Fire it up on your computer while you're eating or maybe doing some cleaning or paying bills or whatever, and get a sense of what this questioning sounds like on what could be a landmark decision.